answer these before we go on with some guided meditation, hopefully. Okay, so first question. Is developing metta considered right effort and right intention of the Noble Eightfold Path? Well, yes and no. Is that sufficient as an answer? Probably not. In terms of when we're practicing Dhamma, all of the different factors of the Eightfold Path come together, don't they? Yeah? So they all work together all the time. So we always are practicing with the right view and the right intention and so on. Even factors like right speech. And classically, when they analyse the right speech in the Eightfold Path, it's according to the Theravadin Abhidhamma, the right speech is the most fundamental level is the absence of wrong speech. Okay, so even while you're sitting there meditating, you're still practicing right speech, even though you're not saying anything. Yeah? Well, at least you're not breaking, at least you're not lying while you're sitting there meditating. Yeah? And similarly with right action and right livelihood. So actually all of the factors of the path come together in all of the different aspects of what we're doing. However, in terms of metta specifically, metta is directly mentioned in the Eightfold Path under the category of right intention. So that was got it right there to say it's right intention, the second factor. Yeah, so we have what's called avihimsa sankappa as the intention for non-harming, which essentially means the same as loving-kindness. However, at that stage of right intention of the Noble Eightfold Path is just meant in a very general sense. So that's just meant that the general attitude, the general intention, the general motivation of non-harming, of having loving-kindness and so on. It's not talking yet about the specific meditation on metta, on loving-kindness, okay? So samasankappa is still very much a preliminary factor of the path. The real meditation factors of the Eightfold Path, of course, is the last three factors, right effort, right mindfulness, and right samadhi. So what the metta meditation is the practice of those three things. So, of course, yes, right effort, we're practicing to overcome the unwholesome. But specifically, meditation comes under the right mindfulness of the Eightfold Path. Yeah? So the holding the metta in mind, holding the loving kindness in mind and practicing and developing that, furthering that, this comes under right mindfulness. And when we purify our mind and reach deep states of concentration because of that, then this is the right samadhi of the Eightfold Path. Yeah? So all of those factors of the path come together. Also, the question goes on, I've read that you can get liberated through metta. How is that? Well, you just keep on going until everything goes. The basic thing with metta, of course, like all meditations, okay, meditations all have the same general effect, which is to help overcome hindrances, help purify the mind, help you be more clearly aware, develop your wisdom, all of those things. So any meditation will do all of those kinds of factors and lead and support your liberation because of that. Metta, in addition, metta has a specific quality, or in fact, the Brahma Viharas have a specific quality of dissolving the boundary between self and other. Okay, so they dissolve that boundary. And when you don't distinguish between yourself and other, you have metta for all beings, sabbe sattā, yeah, all beings. And you know the Buddha taught about not self, yeah? And so this is one of the secrets, is that not self is actually right next door to all beings. The difference between all beings and no beings is just a tiny, tiny little difference, yeah? Because the whole point of that idea of a being or a self is to to distinguish, to differentiate between oneself and others, to create a sense of my own identity. And through metta, we're gradually dissolving that. So once we've developed metta to a deep level, it then becomes very natural to have a strong insight on the basis of metta. Yeah? So that actually leads quite naturally to be able to have an insight into the idea of not self. And in addition, metta has the other very strong quality that when you do develop insight, that you're emotionally ready for it. Okay, and this is also very, very important and not to be underestimated. How are we going with the... Okay, that's not going to help. We'll do, that's all right. We'll do a bit, we'll do some more experimenting later on. We'll figure out how to make it work, yeah? So one of the big problems, especially with developing deep levels of insight, is that it's very, very scary. Letting go of things is absolutely terrifying. And if you think that insight is not scary, you've never had one. Insights are the most terrifying thing you will ever have in your life. Or they can be. Not all insights, but you see the emptiness of things. You see that all of those things that you've held on to and attached to all your life just aren't real. And so it shakes you to the core. It doesn't even shake you to the core. It shows you that there's no core to be shaken in the first place. Yeah? So if you come from the metta background, you have that strong kind of emotional resilience and centeredness and groundedness, and that allows you to take on board these insights without getting freaked out by them. So this is another very important benefit of metta. Okay. Okay, so can we have more than one interview per day? And if there's nobody else doing the interviews, can we have a long chat? Look, if you want to have a longer talk than just the short interview, then just come for your short interview and let me know, and we can see if we can arrange a longer talk. If you want to have more than one interview per day, that's okay, but just keep an eye on the list and give other people a chance also, so don't sort of rush in and fill your name in all the blank spaces or whatever. But if you see that there is some blank spaces and you want to have another interview, that's fine. Okay. Oh, here's just a note of thanks for reminding us that our body and our ligaments get accustomed to sitting on the chair, and by sitting on the floor we suffer unnecessary pain. Which is not the middle way. So, yeah, I think that's a good thing to always remember. And also I think it's useful to remember that just as that applies in a physical sense, it also applies in a mental sense, yeah? That if we try to force ourselves mentally into the Dhamma or into meditation when we're not ready for it, also this is going to cause us unnecessary pain, yeah? And can break things, just like you can break your knees if you try to force yourself to sit too long, or you can break your head if you try to force yourself into the Dhamma too quickly. And so a lot of people like to discuss these things. For example, a classic one which we've been discussing a lot recently is there such a thing as rebirth? And a lot of people, if they're not brought up from a Buddhist perspective, not a lot, but some people find it very difficult to accept the notion of rebirth. And I think it's important to understand that, you know, we might think that these things are important from a Buddhist perspective, but people have to come to them in their own time. Yeah, there's no point in forcing ideas on people or dogmas on them or whatever. But just to let people gradually come round to things. These things take time. Okay, maybe in the morning you can give a guided meditation. I certainly will as soon as I finish answering all the questions. Sorry, does it matter if you eat and then meditate straight afterwards? No, that's fine. Of course, you likely find your body's energy sort of goes into the tummy rather than into any higher activities. So probably, don't have too much expectations. Usually in the forest tradition, monks will do walking meditation after the meal. So that's usually the best kind of thing. Or if you need to have a rest or something like that, it's also fine. If you like to have a sit, but the only problem is if you sit after the meal, then it's quite normal that you get a little bit drowsy. So that's okay, but just don't make a habit of it. That's all. Okay. I think the difference between loving the self is that we're attached to our self, in quote marks, but we've not developed unconditional love for ourselves, since we always want to change ourselves and are not accepting ourselves. So we lack the real metta into I, yet we are attached to I. And I think that's a very, very good point, that this is the difference, one of the very crucial differences between the attachment which we normally take for love and the real unconditional love, which is metta. Is that unconditional love doesn't want to change anything. It's always accepting. And I think that's a very good point. Okay, so thank you for all of those questions and remarks. So for the next little while, let's do some guided meditation. And we'll continue to do the metta for oneself. Sitting quietly. Bringing a sense of ease into the body. body as alert and yet relaxed. Noticing the feelings in the body, the pressure of the seat, the touch of cloth on the skin, the sounds, any tensions or aches in the body. Scanning through the different parts of the body, just noticing how they feel. starts to think about this and that, just cut through the stream of thought, noting, thinking. Thinking. Focusing awareness on the silence. The space, the gap between the thoughts. And leaving the mind focused in the heart, you say to oneself, may I be happy, may I be happy, may I be happy. Repeating those words again and again and again. Evenly, steadily, distinctly, making a firm foundation for the mind. Paying attention inside the body, as you say the words, may I be happy, may I be happy, may I be happy. Whatever doubts come, whatever worries, whatever resistance, just Just don't worry about it. Just leave it aside. Accept whatever is here. Accept whoever you are. This is a time to be not judging, not criticizing. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. Reminding oneself of that pure, wholesome wish, that intention of loving kindness, that aspiration to be happy. Remember that there's nothing that each of us wants more. And just to be happy. noticing deep in the heart is something that's more subtle than the words. That's the feeling of metta. It's soft, gentle. Like the warm glow around the candle flame, or like a soft patch of moonlight, or like a tuft of cotton wool. That feeling, gently hold that in the mind. Keep the feeling clear and close. Holding it gently, like you're holding a little bird in your hands. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. Now coming near the end of the meditation, letting the words of metta go, letting the feeling of metta fade away, and allowing the mind to return to a neutral space, empty, open and clear. Watching in that open space. And before we finish, just taking a minute to reflect on the meditation we've just done together. What was that like? What were the different stages of the meditation? How did it unfold? What was useful? What was obstructive? Did the feeling of metta arise at all? If it did, where was it? What did it feel like? So each time you meditate, you should reflect like this for a minute or two at the end, so that we learn and understand about how our meditation's been going. There's no need to find answers to these questions. Your mind will know the answer when the time's right. The point is just to awaken the inquiring mind. To look. When you look, the answer will come when you need it. And finally, we can dedicate the merit of our practice. May all beings be happy. May all beings be well. May all beings finally realize Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu. Then you can open your eyes and come out of meditation. So, from now on, we can continue with the walking and sitting meditation until lunchtime. I'm going to be doing the interviews this morning and this afternoon. If you haven't checked when your assigned interview time is yet, if you could please do so. Remember that even if you don't want to have an interview, I want you to have one. Okay, so